hot towels straight out of the dryer. It was the weirdest thing on a day already full of weirdness. He took a satisfying gulp, toothpick still in his mouth. His eyes were softer now, round, with sleepy lids. A smile twitched at the corner of his mustache. He looked younger, cute, even. Dangerously cute. He gave me a wink, and I abruptly looked away, turning my attention to the sky in hopes of covering up my blatant staring. The irony wasn't lost in that he could stare freely at me, like a psycho, I might add, while I wanted to keep my actions close to my chest. The guy in the store said there was supposed to be a storm tonight on the coast, I said hesitantly, as if Dex would decide against the trip. He nodded and leaned against the car.
I heard that this morning. I wouldn't worry too much about it, kiddo. We'll get what we need. Ghosts aren't afraid of a little wild weather, are they now?
I shook my head. They weren't afraid of wild weather, no. But it occurred to me that they might not show up at all, regardless of the weather. That's what I was afraid of most of all. I'd be leading Dex into the lighthouse, cameras blazing, and finding nothing.
You look a lot older than I thought,
Dex said. The toothpick switched sides. Oh? I wasn't sure if it was a compliment or not. No one likes to hear they look older.
Well, it's not a bad thing, he said, reading my face. I just thought you were.
I raised my brow. Well,
someone more transparent.
He finished the sentence off with another gulp of his coffee. He threw the empty cup in the bin and wiped his lips with the back of his hand. Before I had any chance to digest what he said and wonder how he finished that cup of coffee so damn fast, a shrill voice interrupted my thoughts. Perry Palomino? He exclaimed from behind me. I froze, not recognizing the voice off the bat, but still worried that someone here knew my name. I glanced warily at Dex, who was already looking over my shoulder. I slowly turned to the direction of the sound. A medium-sized girl with long, slim arms, a cascade of radiant red hair that wasn't found in Mother Nature, and enviously shaped jeans, was staring at me with her mouth open. It took me a second to recognize her face, but once I saw those pink lips, jaunty nose, and darkly framed emerald eyes, I knew who it was. Debbie Birmingham. Her name said it all. She was always the belle of the ball. I had gone to college with Debbie. She had been in the same advertising program as me, though her looks and steely resolve were always better matched for public relations. She wasn't exactly the creative type. She was actually one of my better friends throughout college, but we kind of lost touch after the second year. It hadn't ended awkwardly. I mean, we were friends on Facebook and everything, but I had literally not seen her for a few years now, and that in itself was a bit unnerving. Nonetheless, I flashed Debbie my brightest smile. Hey, Debbie, I said, trying to sound as confident as possible. All of my feelings of inadequacy from being her friend came flooding back. She walked across the pump divide and put me in an awkward embrace that smelled like Dior and Pantene Pro-V. I giggled nervously and took a step backward. She held me by the shoulders and looked me up and down like I was some outfit she was going to try on. You're looking lovely. It's been so long, she squealed. She eyed Dex briefly with vague interest, then looked back at me. I see you on the Facebook from time to time, but we never really talk. What have you been up to? I totally thought Dex would have headed back into the car and given us some privacy, but after he had paid the station attendant, he folded his arms and continued to lean against the car, as if he also wanted to know what I'd been up to. You know, I said, forcing a smile, just the same old. Are you still taking those crazy classes of yours? She asked, a flitter of amusement on her face. Not the good kind of amusement, but the patronizing kind. No, I kind of gave up on that. I laughed, hoping it sounded breezy. Thank goodness. People were starting to get afraid of you. I gave her a quizzical look, but she continued, not noticing. I saw you work at Allingham & Associates. You know, I almost got hired there to be an account coordinator, but I got a better offer at Mindtrap. What do you do there? I felt my face getting hotter. My eyes automatically dropped to the ground. I didn't want to look at her, nor did I want to look at Dex, and I could tell both of them were watching me expectantly. I'm the front desk coordinator, I mumbled. Oh, she said, sounding surprised. You mean reception? Yeah. Oh, well, she said, baring her toothpaste commercial teeth and patted me on the shoulder. I'm sure you'll find something one day. It's a tough economy right now, right? I nodded and tried to think of something witty to say, but all I came up with was just a brain fart. Do you still talk to anyone from school? She asked, fidgeting with her top as if the banality of talking to me was starting to bore her already.
No, no one, I answered truthfully. I felt lamer by the second.
Really? You know, Adele, Steve, Ashley, actually a whole bunch of us are living downtown now, right here in Portland. I would have thought you'd talk to at least some of the old group.
I shook my head, wanting the conversation to be over. If she was friends with them, wouldn't she know that? Oh, but of course, she was proving a point. The truth was I had lost touch with a lot of people after college. It wasn't on purpose. I just gradually became more of a loner at the end of the final year. The people Debbie mentioned were all fine to party with at the beginning, but I got that awkward feeling whenever I was around them, like they were letting me hang out with them out of pity or something. After a while, it was just easier to hole up in my dorm room by myself and spend my nights listening to tunes and making weird clay sculptures, as you do. I must have been mulling that over for longer than I thought, because Debbie looked over at Dex.
I'm sorry I haven't introduced myself. I'm Debbie. I went to college with Perry and Eugene.
She extended her slender hand, which Dex shook politely.
Dex, he said.
When he took his hand back, he looked down and grimaced.
Sorry, I think I got coffee all over your hand.
She glanced at it and quickly wiped her hand on her jeans, trying not to look disgusted and failing at it.
So, how long have you two been together? She asked.
Before either Dex or I could correct her, not that I really wanted to, as I felt that having someone as handsome as Dex by my side was at least doing me some favors, even if he had bad handshaking habits, someone else caught Debbie's attention. A tall, meaty-looking fellow came out of the gas station with a case of beer under his wide bicep and stopped beside her with an expectant look on his face. He looked familiar, but it took me a few seconds to place him. I thought maybe it was someone I went to college with, as he was apparently there with Debbie. But the moment our eyes locked, I knew who it was. Patrick Morrison. I went to high school with him. We weren't friends, but we had mutual friends. He wasn't the most popular guy in school, but he had wavy dark hair, brilliant hazel eyes, and the same taste in music as me. In high school, music was the divider of friends, the sorter of groups, and the way we defined each other. The fact that this cute guy went to the same concerts as I did was like a godsend, and I was absolutely smitten with him. He was usually nice enough to me, but like all guys back then, he wouldn't have given me the time of day if he didn't have to. I remember when he finally signed my senior yearbook, it was the happiest damn day of my life. Pretty pathetic when you think about it. And yet here he was, 5 years later, standing beside Debbie Birmingham at a gas station outside of Portland.
Holy shit, he said, pointing at me. I know you.
I quickly looked at Dex. His brows were raised at me, a hint of smile on his lips. I could tell he was enjoying this little reunion.
Yeah, hey, I said shyly at Patrick.
He looked at Debbie.
How do you guys know each other?
She gestured at me with less enthusiasm than before.
Oh, Perry and I went to college together. I should have realized you went to the same high school.
He nodded, still smiling at me. For a minute there, I felt kind of lost in his eyes, eyes that held the same sparkle as they did back in the day. Sometimes I think all of the dramatics of high school were exaggerated, all the crushes completely unjustified. But seeing him again, I knew this one wasn't quite buried yet. I even started to think that perhaps his smile was a lot more generous than any I had gotten before. The thought that he was actually happy to see me crossed my mind, as well as the pride and the fact that he recognized me. But that all ended when he opened his mouth again.
He used to be so fat,
he said, and broke out into laughter. I stiffened at the comment and felt the blood rushing back to my apple cheeks. There went that. In an instant, my self-esteem nosedived, and it was never even high to begin with. I tried to laugh it off. Well, I lost a bit of weight since then. Patrick kept laughing.
I mean, you look better now, but wow, good job, Perry. No longer that little chubby girl who used to stare at me all day.
Oh, my God, kill me now. Seriously, who says that to someone? I watched him laugh and was even more appalled when Debbie joined in, too. Not that she knew me back then, but I could see how she'd find that funny. The bitch always hated me.
You learn something new every day, Debbie smirked. But seriously, you look great, Perry.
Patrick wiped the smile off his face and gave Dex a quick glance.
So, where are you headed?
The coast, I said quickly, before Dex actually filled them in. Not that he was saying much, but if he did start to explain what we were really doing, I would have looked even more stupid.
Us too,
Debbie smiled mischievously.
1-year anniversary celebration at Cannon Beach. Are you guys on a little romantic rendezvous? I opened my mouth to say something. What? I wasn't sure, but it probably wasn't the truth. But Dex beat me to it.
Nothing says romance like storm watching.
He winked at them. Okay, I was not expecting him to say that. I was suddenly warm with gratefulness. It was a simple thing. He didn't lie, he just didn't correct them. But it made me feel like at least one good facade was still intact. Debbie gave us an approving look.
Oh, very true. Well, good to see you, Perry. Don't be a stranger.
Patrick said roughly the same thing, and they both waved at us in unison. As soon as we got in Dex's SUV, I let out the biggest sigh of relief and thunked my head down on the dash. Dex patted me lightly on the back.
You survived, he said with a chuckle.
I looked up at him, feeling both embarrassed and relieved.
Thank you so much for, well, not telling them the truth about us. I mean, there is no us, but, you know,
I rambled. He shrugged and started the car.
Don't worry about it, kiddo. You'll just owe me.
I straightened up and fastened my seatbelt as Dex brought the car back on the highway.
Owe you?
I asked with caution. He thumbed at the back seat.
Those are for you.
I turned in the seat and looked. There was a stack of books behind me that weren't there before. I brought them onto my lap and looked them over. They were from the Seattle Public Library. What are these? I said.
Books, Perry, books. The backbone of civilization. And our homework.
I eyed them curiously. Famous Oregon shipwrecks. Mysteries of the Oregon coast. Folklore and myth in 20th century Oregon. Shanghai City, the true Portland. Lighthouses of the West Coast. Charles Berlitz's World of Strange Phenomena. It was a veritable treasure trove of local supernatural history.
This is your homework?
I asked and started flipping through them. He laughed.
No, it's your homework. I've already read them.
Why do I need to read these?
Because, he said sternly.
I caught a slight blaze in his eye as his brows swooped down.
Oh, because, I mocked him. That's my favorite reason of all.
The seriousness behind his eyes faded, and he grinned. He had such a lovely smile when he was using it for good and not evil.
You can't just head into a situation blind. You have to know the background, the history of a place if you want to exploit it. If we head into that lighthouse and see a bunch of weird whatnots and such, it's not going to make any sense unless we know the how, the why, and the when. Following?
Yes, I lied.
He knew it, too. He spoke slower.
If this lighthouse is truly haunted, we won't be able to make any sense of it until we know why it's haunted. Things don't happen without reason. There is a story to be told at this place, and you'll only recognize it if you've read it. Hence the books. That lighthouse isn't just a random tower of wood and concrete. It had a birth, it had a death, and many comings of age in between.
Well, you already seem to know so much about it, like old Roddy and whatever that nonsense was, so why don't you tell me about it?
He sighed. I'm not the host here. You are. And you don't seem to believe a single word I say.
That's not true, I said. Of course he was right.
Just read them.
All of them?
He reached over and flipped open a page with a post-it note stuck to it.
I've marked and highlighted everything you need to know. We have 2 hours before we hit your uncle's place. Now, go.
Chapter 8. The car chugged along for the next hour or so, past dreary pockets of farmland that normally sparkled under the sunshine, but now had the heavy feeling of impending death. I'm not trying to be dramatic. I swear, it just looked like the scenery had gone from healthy to sick in the course of a week. Some trees didn't even have their leaves anymore, though I could have sworn they did last Saturday. The wind that shot over the coastal hills and shook our car probably helped in the removal process. I was cuddled up in my seat, absently flipping through the books that Dex had instructed me to read. It wasn't going too well. Not only did I get carsick when I read in a moving vehicle, but I was too aware of being in a car with a guy I didn't know at all. I tried not to stare at him. It was tough, though. The longer I was in that car, the more I was mesmerized by his face. Sometimes it looked at peace. His soft eyelids would sort of half-droop. The corners of his wide mouth would twitch intermittently, like he was on the cusp of telling a ridiculous joke. Sometimes he looked like he was consumed by some internal fire. His eyes became darker, harder, framed by deep, chasmy shadows created by the brooding brow. His mouth would set in a hard, firm line, and his smart-ass smirk would vanish. I found this face appeared every time I asked him a question. I wanted to know where in Seattle he lived, what he did for fun, and did he always want to be a filmmaker? The answers? Queen Anne, this and that, and no. Followed by, that thing won't read itself, and a quick tap on the books. I felt like I was a teenager, my father ordering me to do my homework instead of going out. I didn't listen to my father, but I listened to Dex. He was more intimidating somehow. Needless to say, I was relieved when we finally saw the ocean and headed down toward Rocky Point and Al's place. The weather on the coast was a monster. Huge surf crashed against the sandy beaches, twisted, bent trees continued to defy physics in the wind battering, and the town of Cannon Beach looked like it was on lockdown. The winding, narrow route of 101 was especially thrilling. We pulled up to Uncle Al's just after noon. The boys were out at their jobs, robbing people, probably, but Uncle Al was there to greet us. Well, me, at least. "Barry," he said with outstretched arms, "back so soon." I laughed and gave him a quick hug. I was glad he was happy to see me. I felt like I might be a burden to him this weekend. "And this is the filmmaker?" I looked over at Dex, who was standing a few feet behind me. Dex nodded and came forward. He wiped his hand on his pants before giving Al what looked to be a very strong handshake. Al raised his eyebrows and took back his hand.
"Excellent handshake," Dex told him seriously. "Firm, not at all like a jellyfish."
He gave an extra nod for impact.
"Oh, well, that's good."
Al shot me an odd look. I smiled nervously. "Yes, Uncle Al, this is Dex, the filmmaker for Shownet."
"Uncle Al," Dex acknowledged gravely.
Al paused at that before asking,
"You two are both staying over, correct?"
Dex shook his head.
"I appreciate the offer, sir, but I booked a motel in Tillamook."
Al laughed.
"The Mook? Ah, you don't want to stay there. Good for cheese, and that's about it. I insist you stay with us tonight."
I looked at Dex. There was no denying it. I totally hoped he would say yes. Dex smiled politely, but stayed firm.
"And I insist that I don't. I've got a worried girlfriend back in Seattle, and she's already none too happy that I'm spending the weekend down here with your barely legal niece."
I felt like someone stabbed me in the gut, and I was just leaking disappointment everywhere. Girlfriend? I hadn't heard him mention a girlfriend yet, and his Facebook didn't say anything about it either. Then I remembered the pictures of him with his arm around Jennifer Rodriguez. Could that be her? I looked over at Dex with his eyebrow ring, dark clothes, long sideburns, shaggy black hair, the end of a tattoo that sometimes peeked out beneath a shirt sleeve, alternative music tastes, and overall zany personality. He couldn't possibly be interested in a girl like that, could he? But then again, what was I expecting? The guy was a filmmaker and apparently a composer and one-time singer. He certainly could be charming when he wanted to be, and he was blessed with some very good genes. It made sense that he would have a hot babe as a girlfriend. I felt foolish. I don't even know why. I didn't even really like the guy, but I still felt stupid, nonetheless. As if my subconscious was on the prowl, hoping to make a meal of him one day. And how ridiculous was that, anyway? Like, I could even get a guy like him, let alone a guy who was 10 years older than me. Didn't he just say I was barely legal? I took a deep breath and tried to brush it off. It shouldn't bother me, but of course it did. Most things that wouldn't bother anyone else bothered me. While my mind and heart were having a minor scuffle with each other, Dex and Al were chatting away.
"So, is there a key we could use to get in? We would like to minimize any damage to the lighthouse,"
Dex asked Al.
"Not that anything would get damaged, but you probably don't want Mr. Miyagi over here kicking down any doors."
He jettisoned a thumb in my direction. I smiled brightly, hoping he hadn't spotted my momentary weakness.
"Yes, there is a skeleton key you can use," said Al. "Now, come inside for some coffee. I'll put on a pot."
Oh, coffee. That would be welcome, warm and distracting.
"Appreciate it," said Dex, "but we've got to do some setup shots before it gets dark."
Damn. He turned to me and gestured to the trunk of the SUV.
"Perry, I'm going to need your help getting the equipment out."
Al sighed and shuffled inside, disappointed at losing coffee company.
"I'll get you the key."
I felt bad for him. Last weekend aside, I had a feeling he didn't get company too often.
My parents often said most of his friends were actually his ex-wife's friends. I made a note of actually talking to Uncle Al later and asking about him instead of running off as I would normally do. He came back out and pressed the key into my hand, his gentle, worried eyes looking deep into mine. "Don't stay out too long. I'm ordering Chinese food for us all tonight." I nodded and hoped Dex would at least take him up on that offer. Dex gave him a quick wave.
"Sounds good."
Dex headed for the car, and I followed, watching his slim hips saunter and his thick, dark hair get whipped up by the breeze. He opened the trunk and handed me a tall cardboard box. "What's this?" I peered down the shaft.
"Just a white bounce board, for light."
I pulled it out, and it flapped out into a round circle that rippled in the wind. I aimed the board at his face, lighting up the shadows under his eyes. He batted his eyes at me, that smirk ever present.
"Think that'll make me good looking?"
he asked, untangling some cords. I desperately thought of something smart to say. All I could think of was how damn good looking he was. I was screwed. He looked up from the cords with interest, goading me to say something. "No," I blurted out lamely. He laughed and shook his head, turning his attention back to the cords. "I'm disappointed in you. Surely I thought you'd have come up with some grand insult."
"I was trying," I said, "and don't call me Shirley."
That smile again. It made my chest feel funny. Funny in a good way, which made it funny in a bad way. My brain rerouted to thoughts of his girlfriend. Damn her. Damn her and damn me for caring. Dex put the cords neatly away and started fiddling with a camera. Without looking at me, he pointed to a long canvas bag.
"Tripod. Don't take it out, though. Just put it on your shoulder."
I took the tripod bag and awkwardly tried to get the strap around me. It was almost longer than my body and kept hitting the ground and then hitting me in the face. Dex watched this uncomfortable dance with the tripod, which only made me feel more bumbling. Once I had it somewhat under control, he got up with a tiny remote microphone in his hand and stood in front of me.
"Shit, you are short, aren't you?"
he stated gleefully. He bent down and pinned the microphone onto my sweater. His face was mere inches from mine. I didn't dare breathe. I studied the bead on his eyebrow ring. It looked like black obsidian, with the tiniest scrolls of gray and white. My heart thumped in my throat. That rush of energy and warmth started creeping through my body again. This was ridiculous. I needed to detach myself from the situation pronto.
"You're short," I shot back, "for a guy."
He finished pinning the mic, but kept his head at my level and looked into my eyes. For a split second, I wondered if he was going to kiss me. Of course he wasn't, and I immediately felt awkward. I swallowed hard. He held my gaze intently, and his mouth lagged into an easy leer, like he was enjoying making me feel uncomfortable. Well, I wouldn't let him. I narrowed my eyes at him, breaking the spell. "What are you looking at?" It didn't faze him, but he did straighten up and look away.
"Oh, me? I'm just seeing what I'm working with here," he said casually and pulled a bigger camera out of its bag.
"And what is that exactly?" I asked, steadying myself against a gust of wind.
"I don't think I'll find out anytime soon."
He picked up the whiteboard and shut the trunk.
"Shall we?"
I nodded, and we walked off toward the beach. It wasn't until I was a few feet behind him that I let out a long breath. It's like I'd forgotten to breathe for the last 10 minutes. We didn't head to the lighthouse right away. Dex thought it would be best to film some opening shots out where it was scenic. I stood on the beach, facing north toward him. The lighthouse sat potently in the background. Dex had originally wanted a shot of the ocean crashing wildly behind me, but the amount of sea spray that was whipped in the air was damaging to the camera, not to mention the fact that it blew my hair out in front of me. It took 2 seconds to realize I couldn't be a good host if I was Cousin It. The whiteboard was placed on an angle at my feet. I had my chucks on top of them to keep the board from flying away, but thankfully he was only shooting from the waist up, like my fat ass needed to be on film anyway. Dex set up the tripod as a precautionary measure to keep the camera steady as the wind gusts threatened to blow him over.
"Thank fuck I brought the wireless mics, otherwise we wouldn't be hearing shit right now," he grunted,
his eyes fastened on the camera's view screen. He seemed to grow tyrannical when he had the camera in front of his face. I did what he said and tried to go with the flow, but I could see his mind going a mile a minute, his eyes searching all physicalities of the space in front of him.
He reminded me of a mad scientist. He pulled the focus back and forth, making minuscule adjustments, keenly watching the screen. I wasn't sure what he was looking for, or at, precisely. I just hoped he didn't have it zoomed all the way up my nose. I sighed and looked at the ocean. I didn't feel the familiar ebb and flow of emotions as I usually did when I stood on the beach. Today, the ocean was a stranger, cold, rough, and ready to take me out. As the waves sucked back, they grasped the wet sand like desperate fingers reaching for me. "Stay there," Dex said, his voice quiet. "Don't move." I tried to stay where I was, staring at the ocean. "What were you thinking about?" he asked with interest. I wanted to turn and look at him. "Nothing."
"You think too much."
"You're telling me," I said. "Can I move yet?"
"Fuck. Do whatever you like. Moment's lost."
I looked over at him. He straightened up and stretched his arms above his head. His shirt raised up a bit and exposed a flat stomach with a thin trail of stomach hair that disappeared into the band of his boxers. I looked away before he could catch me staring. "Sorry," I told him. "Well, what now?" He sighed, long and exaggerated. He clasped his palms together and stared at me like he had at the car earlier. He gazed right through me. I shivered. I'm pretty sure it was because of the cold, and not because I found his eyes disquieting at times. They moved from looking through me to looking at me. They relaxed considerably. He cocked his head to the side.
"Did you bring something warmer to wear? Do you want my hoodie?"
I shook my head. "I'm fine, but thanks." He watched me for a few seconds, as if to verify that I wasn't lying.
"Am I giving you the creeps?"
I let out a nervous laugh. Normally, I would have just said anything to make the other person feel better, but with Dex, I discovered that being straight with him was the only way to go. "Well, yeah," I shrugged. "For someone you said wasn't transparent, you seemed to always be looking through me." He smiled.
"I appreciate your honesty, Perry Mason. If I continue to get all creepy on you, do let me know."
I felt better now that it was out in the open. But despite having no trouble telling him that he freaked me out at times, there was no way in hell I would tell him I thought he was growing increasingly cuter by the second.
"Okay, let's do a quick shot here."
He pointed at me to stay put.
"Can you get the hair out of your face and tuck it around to the right?"
I reached over and gathered what hair I could. I grimaced at the touch of my strands, matted and tangled from the wind and salt. He smiled at the image on the camera. He was probably laughing at me. I gave the camera a look. He looked up.
"When I said you weren't transparent, I meant it. You got a lot going on inside."
He tapped the side of his head. "Don't we all?" I jeered. I felt vaguely insulted. Just because I was 22 and not 32 didn't mean I hadn't been through a lot. Dex took his attention away from the camera and looked me straight in the eye, with sincerity this time.
"I'm sorry," he said, his voice low, warm, and serious. "I didn't mean to belittle you by any means, okay?"
I may not have been transparent, but he was awfully good at reading my thoughts, or at least my face. He nodded, apparently satisfied with my non-response, and turned back to the camera.
"Okay, do you remember your lines?"
"What the hell, lines? When did the topic of lines come up?" "What lines?"
"Didn't I give you lines?"
He scratched his head. "No, Dex, history homework, but no lines." He thought that over, then shrugged.
"Ah, fuck it," he waved at me. "Just make something up."
"About what?"
"About the lighthouse, what we might experience. Introduce the show. Tell us some history. Go."
He pointed at me. Oh, God, this was worse than being called on in class when you didn't do the homework. I cleared my throat. "Good evening. Welcome to..." I paused. I didn't actually know the name of our show. "Ghost Blogger. Tonight's mystery show revolves around the mysteries of this lighthouse." I motioned at the lighthouse like one of those cheesy babes who showcase the prizes on The Price is Right. My mind was frantically spinning, trying to come up with ideas faster than I could talk. The Rocky Point Lighthouse has an interesting and sordid history, one that I was about to make up. It was built at the turn of the century to warn incoming ships. However, after only 10 years in service, it started to have mechanical problems. At least they figured it was mechanical, because no matter what they tried, the light kept going out after dark. Rumors started that the lighthouse was cursed as it lay dark at night and became invisible to passing ships. The lighthouse was deserted and boarded up, and a new lighthouse was resurrected out on a rocky outcrop further up the coast. I pointed up the coast, hoping Dex would follow my finger and take the pressure off me for a moment. I had no idea what the hell I was talking about and had no idea how long I could keep it up. But the camera stayed on me. Dex met my eyes for a second and silently encouraged me to keep going. I took a deep breath. However, horror and tragedy met that lighthouse as well. The day before it was set to be lit, a merchant ship slammed into nearby rocks during the night. The ship sank, along with 16 men and 2 women who drowned in its waves. At least that's what the official record was. Legend has it that one of the women managed to drift along on a piece of driftwood until she reached the shore, right there. I looked behind me at the rocky coast beneath the lighthouse and cliff, and just like that, I couldn't breathe. The immense pressure of cold prickles seized my body, and I froze on the spot. I stared blankly at the area, and suddenly my world was black. I was now standing beneath the lighthouse, waves crashing into me from behind as my attention was fixed on the sight above. On the cliff stood the man in black, his fingers pointed straight out at the darkening sea and sky. Behind him stood another figure, obscured by the shadows. The light from the lighthouse came on then, and in that instance of stark illumination, I could see that other figure. It was me. It was me, standing there plain as day and slowly reaching for the shoulder of the man in black. I felt fingers grasp my own shoulder. I turned and screamed. I was back on the beach in the daylight. Dex was standing beside me with his hand firmly on me. It took a good few seconds to stop screaming and realize what I was looking at. He grabbed my other shoulder. Perry. Perry, it's me, Dex. Are you okay? What happened? My eyes flitted across his face, unable to focus. He squeezed my shoulders and brought me closer to him. It would have been nice if only I wasn't freaking the fuck out. Perry, look at me. Look at me. He put his face in closer until I had no choice but to focus on those brown orbs of his. I could see he was just as frightened as me. You're here now, with me, okay? Everything's okay. I nodded and took in a deep breath. He didn't let go of my shoulders or get out of my face. He searched my face relentlessly. That frown line of his is really etched in there, I thought absently. What happened? You turned and you froze. You went completely white. I kept calling your name over and over again. Couldn't you hear me? Shaking my head, I told him I couldn't hear anything. I wasn't here anymore. I was somewhere else.
Where?
I looked away. I don't know. Nowhere. I thought I was dreaming.
Where did you go? What did you see?
He shook me slightly. It reminded me of something. I wondered if he had ever seen Hitchcock's Vertigo, because he was starting to go all Jimmy Stewart on me. I pulled away from him and walked a few feet towards the ocean, conscious of the waves, foamy fingers, but needing the space to breathe.
We should go back. Dex said and turned to gather his equipment.
No, I yelled, surprising myself. It surprised him, too. Sorry, but no. Let's just go to the lighthouse, plan the shots for the night, and get this over with, I said through gritted teeth. I was not about to let this whole operation turn to shit just because I was having nonsensical episodes. I would not let my imagination, because that's all it had to be, get the best of me.
Perry, I don't know what just happened to you or where you went, but there is no shame in calling this whole thing off.
He looked earnest and a tad anxious, the way I imagined I looked when I was dealing with Ada. The last thing I needed or wanted was for him to be worried about me. It was nothing, Dex. I was daydreaming, all right? Let's do this.
I feel responsible for you.
Why? Because you called me up and was all like,
oh, hello there, little girl. Do you like scary movies?
I imitated his growly voice and talked into my hand.
I was hoping we could make a scary movie together. Maybe then I could make some money off of you. Hope you like to read history books at gunpoint. That's a terrible impersonation, he commented. And just to set the record straight, there is no money to be made here. Do you think I'm getting any money to do this? I paid for my own gas, I'm paying for my own hotel room, and this equipment is all mine. Do you think you can get rich off the internet just because you've had a few hits on your blog? That's not how it works. You do this because you want to do this or because you don't have a choice, and you have a choice, Perry.
I was abashed at his reply, but put on a haughty face.
and my choice is to keep going. Now, I can film myself alone if you'd rather go right now. Dex grinned. It wasn't a happy grin, and shook his head.
Hey, I'm not going anywhere. I can just tell you've been unsure about this whole thing from the start, and I'm giving you a way out.
Well, excuse me if I seemed hesitant. I rolled my eyes. Did he have no idea at all what it was like to be in my shoes? I consider myself to be a very easygoing person, but that only extended so far. 2 days ago, I was basking in the glow of having written my blog. Now I was back at the lighthouse with someone I barely knew and who I was increasingly convinced was slightly unhinged, and filming the whole deal again, hoping to turn it into something for the whole world to see. I thought I was rolling with the punches as quickly as I could.
Okay.
Dex finished stuffing the tripod into the bag and handed it to me. He then offered his hand.
Friends?
I balanced the tripod with my shoulder and slowly extended my hand. I wasn't sure if Dex was my friend or not. I wasn't sure if I could trust him. But there was something that compelled me to be a part of his life somehow, even if it was just for 2 days on this wild West Coast. Ugh, I was doomed. Friends, I said, and smiled shyly. I shook his hand. His hand was hot, and once again I felt that surge of energy rush through me, creating internal goosebumps. I squeezed his hand to match his firm grip. Everything seemed to slow down. The waves were muffled. The wind ruffled my hair in a hazy stupor. In my mind's eye, I could see myself shaking hands on this beach, committing myself to something. I'm happy to report that the rest of the lighthouse excursion was uneventful. I managed to push my fears out of my head, not letting myself think about the dreams and what it could all mean. It was hard, especially when I felt tiny pinpricks of terror rooted in some hazy memory creeping upon me around each corner. I told myself it was merely deja vu from being there only a week ago. Even though it was light out, the lighthouse was still creepy as hell. Maybe even more so, considering you could make out every decrepit line and gray cobweb in detail. Uncle Al had boarded up the window that I had kicked in, but luckily Dex was leaning toward the more rational method of entering via the skeleton key. The lock on the door clicked open with a satisfying sound. The door itself needed a hefty push or two from Dex, but it swung open with a very dramatic creak that echoed across the room. Dex stepped in and looked around. I remained outside.
"Not coming in?" he asked. "Would you rather stay out here while I go look around?"
The air coming in from the room was stale, as if nothing had breathed in there for hundreds of years. It was as dark as coal, and I could only make out the faint outline of a table. But standing outside by myself didn't sound very safe either. I shook my head. I gingerly stepped in and coughed at the thick air. Dex pushed the door even further to allow more light and flow inside.
"I guess you wouldn't have a flashlight on you," he asked.
"iPhone?" I showed it to him. He waved it away and looked at the far corner of the room, squinting.
"I'm just going to try that door over there and see if it works. Don't want any surprises tonight."
I watched him disappear into the amber mist of suspended dust particles. I looked around the room, inspecting it. The table was made of oak or some sturdy tree and was held up by thick, sculpted legs. I made a brief comparison to my own body build. It was bare and covered with a good inch of slimy murk. The walls were bare and gray, save for a few nautical oil paintings that still hung there, out of place. A stack of chairs and an armoire looked to be in the corner, while one wall housed a rusted stove. I heard Dex wrestling with the lock in the darkness.
"So, tell me," he said, his voice echoing. "Where did you read about the two women who were aboard the ship that sank?"
I shivered and pushed the thoughts out of my head. "I made it up. Can we not talk about it here, please?" He paused in the darkness for several seconds before saying,
"Okay."
The key resumed rattling.
"Bingo."
I heard the door creak open. "Great. Can we get out of here now?" I asked. The longer I stood there watching my shadow dance in the dust around me, the more my eyes were starting to play tricks on me.
"You don't want to check out the second floor?"
I heard his voice getting more muffled, as if he was out of the room and onto the staircase at the interior hall. I could see it in my head, the trails of kelp on the stairs.
I wanted to warn him to not go up there, to watch his step, but instead I scooted myself out of the building and into the bright, howling wind outside. I looked up at the sky, eyes wide open, and took in the deepest breath I could imagine.
Sorry.
I jumped and looked over at Dex, who had come out of the building.
We don't have to go up there until later anyway. Though I'm sure there will be enough interesting events downstairs.
He turned and locked the door behind him. I didn't even want to begin to think about what events could transpire. Chapter 9. Despite the fact that we would be returning to the lighthouse later that evening, I was especially glad and relieved when we came back to the house to find it warm and cozy, with the twins playing video games and a giant mess of Chinese food on the kitchen table.
Right on time, Uncle Al exclaimed as we walked in the door. Please, Sid, you must be hungry. You're both pale as ghosts.
He laughed at that last line. I managed a wry smile and plopped down in the chair.
Boys, Al yelled at the living room, his voice booming, put down those video games and come eat your damn food.
I heard the twins moan from the other room, and in a few moments they appeared, looking bleary-eyed as if they had just gotten up from a nap or a graphic-induced coma.
Hey, cuz,
Matt slapped me hard on the back. He looked over at Dex, then back at me.
This one of the ghosts you found at the lighthouse?
He exchanged a mocking look with his brother. I rolled my eyes. Har, har, this is Dex. Dex, these are my cousins, Matt and Tony. Dex gave them a casual salute and nod.
I'd ask which one is the evil one, but you're probably both evil, am I right?
Matt and Tony exchanged a worried glance, but smiled once they realized Dex was kidding. Tony laughed and looked at me.
Where did you find this joker? At the lighthouse, sheesh, Dex joked.
Boys, sit and shut up, commanded Al, throwing paper plates down on the table in front of us and keeping his eyes on Dex and the twins. I could tell he wasn't sure how well his sons would mesh with Dex. Something told me that he had been in a similar situation before. The twins did seem volatile at times, but I didn't know Dex well enough, or at all, to know what to expect from him either. Expect the unexpected seemed to be his life's motto. The boys sat down obediently and started scooping mounds of chow mein on their plates.
Boys, Al barked again, the guests eat first.
He shot Dex at me an apologetic look.
Don't worry about it, Uncle Al,
Dex said. I couldn't help but smile at his choice of words.
Back where I come from, it's customary for guests to eat last. You know, how like the lioness eats first before feeding her cubs. And where do you come from? Seattle,
was Dex's sincere reply. Al laughed.
Remind me not to eat at your house, then. Oh, but you'd be missing out. My girlfriend is an amazing cook.
He leaned back in his chair, the smug smile returning. His eyes sparkled brightly. I did not appreciate how much more relaxed and adorable he looked when he mentioned her.
Girlfriend?
Matt questioned and looked over at me suspiciously as he handed over a carton of sweet and sour pork. I gave him a look, trying to let him know that Dex was in no way a love interest to me.
Is she hot?
Oh, I chided him. What does that matter? Dex looked at me, surprised.
Of course it matters.
He looked at the boys and Al.
For your information, yes, she is.
Oh, jeez. Please don't say it's Jennifer.
How hot?
Tony asked, goading him. Dex pulled his wallet out of his back pocket and took out a wallet-sized photo. He handed it across the table to Tony, who shared it with Matt. I couldn't see it from where I was. Tony and Matt's eyes widened. Even Al looked over and let out a low whistle.
Seriously? This is your girlfriend?
Matt asked incredulously.
Either that or it's some random hot girl I'm groping in a photo booth. Still, win-win.
Dex grinned, and for the first time, I was not charmed by his smile. I felt low. Lower than a cave dweller in a really low cave. I busily stuffed food in my face.
She looks really familiar, Tony mused. Well, she was in Maxim,
Dex announced. I choked on a piece of pork at the same time the twins cried out, Maxim? I started coughing, my face turning red. Everyone turned to look at me.
Are you okay, Perry?
Al asked, about to get up. I nodded frantically and waved for him to sit back down. This was the last thing I needed. The boys turned their attention back to the photo, but out of the corner of my eye, I could see Dex was watching me. I refused to look at him.
Why was she in Maxim? Is she famous?
Tony asked.
Ever see the show Wine Babes? It's on the Shona website, but also gets viewed a lot on YouTube.
Dex was still looking at me as he said this.
No way, Matt cried out. I love that show. I mean, I've seen it. She's one of the babes. Is this a video of the girls with wine who recommended what McDonald's hamburger it should go with? Al asked.
I looked at him surprised. He gave me an explanatory look.
I don't even know how to operate the internet half the time, but I've seen that show.
Dex turned his attention to Al. Thank God.
You have? That's excellent. Good to know the demographic is broadening. Yes, that's my girlfriend, Jennifer Rodriguez, and I'm the show's cameraman and music composer.
She's your girlfriend? What the hell are you doing with her? Tony said, looking disgusted and obviously referring to me.
Hey,
I exclaimed indignantly. Dex laughed.
Management. Gotta do what the boss says.
My jaw dropped. I looked at Dex, livid. Management? Boss? This whole damn show was his fucking idea. Excuse my language. That dirty, stinking liar. Now, Dex was the one who was ignoring my blatant stare. Man, if looks could kill, then I was trying to commit a triple homicide with mine. Al kicked me under the table. I snapped my head at him. He gave me a worried look. I think he thought I was about to blow a gasket. In the past, I had been known to blow up a lot at my parents. My temper isn't exactly a mild one. So I guess he thought I might do the same to Dex. He was also probably a little unsure of how to handle a female's wrath. Either way, though Dex and the boys weren't noticing my flushed face and grinding teeth, Uncle Al sure was. I took a deep breath, composed myself, and started shoving more food in my mouth. I suddenly had no idea what the truth was. Was Dex here because he wanted to be, or what? Was this the lie, or was everything he told me earlier the lie? I was so mad.
Wow,
Tony said and handed the picture back to Dex. I was glad he didn't even attempt to show it to me. The rest of the dinner went swimmingly, for everyone else. I just kept admonishing myself for being attracted to Dex in the first place, and for even thinking that he could be attracted to me. Granted, I never actually had those thoughts, but I figured I must have subconsciously wanted that because I was feeling so stupid and disappointed over his hot girlfriend. On the surface, however, I played it cool. I laughed at Uncle Al's stupid jokes and pretended to be interested in whatever video games Dex and the twins were bonding over. I avoided all eye contact with Dex, though, lest his inquisitive eyes pick up on something. I had no doubt he'd see how I really felt inside. And for the sake of my pride, I would rather he think I was an antisocial bitch than to let him know the truth. When dinner was over with, and the twins had convinced Dex to watch a few rounds of some lame zombie game they were playing, I headed for Uncle Al's liquor cabinet in the kitchen. Al watched me curiously as he threw the paper plates in the garbage.
I can make you something, Perry, he offered sweetly.
I felt like he was handling me with kid gloves. I grabbed a bottle of vodka. Ah, dependable vodka. No, that's okay. I just need some juice of some sort. He opened the fridge and handed me a carton of pulpy orange juice and watched me as I made my drink. I was getting very tired of people watching me all day.
He's an interesting fellow, he said quietly.
I took a slow sip of my drink. It was very strong. I wasn't used to that.
Just watch out, he said, looking over at the living room. I know you're a grown woman now, but you're still my niece, and your parents would kill me if you got hurt.
I'll be fine. I can defend myself, remember? Knee strike. I joked, making a kicking motion with my right leg. Uncle Al smiled.
Oh, I remember, Barry. I saw your karate recitals. But you know what I mean. This man is a lot older than you and has his own agenda. Have fun and enjoy this moment, and I really hope you get something out of this in the end, but watch your heart, okay, Bella?
I gave Al a tired look.
Heart? Ah, come on, Uncle Al, I just met the guy. Men are the last thing on my mind right now, especially someone like that.
I have a hard enough time dealing with myself, let alone another head case. He chuckled and nodded.
I know, but what kind of uncle would I be if I didn't try and protect little Barry?
He reached over for the phone and handed it to me.
By the way, call your mother. She phoned a few times before dinner. I didn't want to tell you before you had some food in your system.
I exhaled grumpily and snatched the phone from him.
By the time I was done dealing with my mother, I was exhausted beyond words. I was just about to go plunk myself down on the couch and mindlessly watch the twins play their games when a huge sound exploded and the whole house shook for a second. The kitchen door flew open, blowing the leftover paper plates off the table. "What was that?" I yelled. I hoped it wasn't the lurch of an earthquake, since we were in prime tsunami zone. Dex hopped to his feet. The windows all started to rattle, and Al ran out of his study to the kitchen door. "I guess the real storm is starting," he cried out. He went to close the door, but Dex snuck past him and ran out into the stormy night. "Hey!" Al yelled after him. "Be careful!" I love storms. I ran out after Dex. Al tried to grab me, but I outmaneuvered him. "Perry!" he warned. But the twins followed me as well, and Al was more than outnumbered. I turned around and saw him shut the door and peer at us through the window. The weather was absolutely wild. The gusts were coming in so strong and blunt that it was hard to stay upright at times. It wasn't raining yet, but the air did feel weighted, like it was about to let loose at any moment. Thunder's mighty rumble shook the sky and the ground beneath us. We waited, spread out on the dark lawn, looking toward the ocean, with bated breath for the lightning to show its face. A few seconds later, 9 Mississippis, to be precise, it forked aggressively from the heavy clouds down to the churning waves on the horizon. It was during the lightning flash that I saw something I had never seen before. In the distance was a solitary island, shaped like a sharp anvil. On top of that mound was what looked like another lighthouse, just like the one I had made up. I froze, keeping my eyes on the spot even as the strike faded and turned my view back to black. As the boys made impressed noises at Mother Nature's display, I waited for the next strike to happen so I could get a better look. It seemed odd that I had never seen that lighthouse out there before, and even odder that I was talking about it earlier. Perhaps I had seen it before through the fog and just never consciously recognized it. Perhaps I read about it in the history books without realizing it. Thunder shook the air again with even more power than before. Its vibrations rattled around in my skull like balls in a washing machine. I started counting, and at 5 Mississippis, the lightning struck. This time there were several electric branches that forked out, some sideways, heading in the direction of the offshore lighthouse that was now clearly illuminated. There was no denying that it was there.
"The Tillamook Lighthouse," Dex said.
I looked beside me. He was standing to my side, and I hadn't even noticed. His cheekbones were obsidian shadows against the house's flickering porch light. I couldn't see his eyes, but I could feel them. He was looking at me, not the lightning show.
"Like that story you made up," he said without emotion. "We should go do this, now."
As he said it, another huge gust of forceful wind knocked me off my feet a little, and the thunder growled again, only closer now. It was definitely a sign from God that we should not be traipsing off to the lighthouse, but Dex had already turned and was running back into the house.
"Get some better clothes and shoes on,"
he yelled over his shoulder and went into the house. Matt and Tony decided to go back in, too.
"You guys are fucking crazy," Tony said as he walked past me.
Matt gave me a shove to get me walking with them. He leaned in.
"I agree," he said. "Watch yourself."
This was probably the first time I had ever seen my cousins act remotely brotherly towards me. I wasn't sure if now, of all times, was the best time for them to start. Once again, Dex and I were heading up the beach toward the lighthouse, but it was already a million times different from the way it was in the afternoon. For one reason, we had half the equipment. The tripod, sound gear, and lighting were all left behind. Dex had his camera on his shoulder, and that was it. For two, we were surrounded by complete darkness. The moon was in a permanent grave somewhere in that tumultuous sky, and the only light we had was from the lightning as it moved further north of us and inland. Its flashes were growing weaker and farther apart. Lightning wasn't exactly the most pleasant light to find your way by. For three, we were in the midst of an increasingly violent storm. Rain started to fall sporadically, though we were spared the brunt of a total downpour thus far. The gusts of wind came stronger and more furious by the minute, until it felt like the entire contents of the beach were lodged in my hair. Not to mention the number of times it knocked me down into the sand, and I'm no lightweight. Luckily, the first few times that my boots couldn't grip on the slippery, sliding dunes, Dex was there to grab my arm and steady me. My iPhone light was completely useless at this point, and I had to put it away in case kernels of sand got lodged in there forever.
Dex still had a flashlight he had borrowed from Al. It was dinky and fading fast, but it was still a source of light. There was the bulb on his camera as well, but that would be a last resort. Considering Dex said he paid for all of his equipment himself, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't pull out his camera until we were inside the lighthouse and safe from the elements. Seconds after brushing away Dex's hand in the dark, he was trying to steady me. Don't get any interesting ideas. I found myself losing my footing again. The wind howled into my side, and the tip of my left boot got tangled up in the strewn dune grass. I lofted forward in slow motion and face-planted into the sand. It didn't hurt, but that didn't stop me from feeling stupid. I breathed sand for a few before pushing myself off the ground and onto my butt. My vision was black ink. I could barely see my hand in front of me, especially as the storm was constantly blowing my hair in my face. Even my yellow peacoat, chosen for its bright and eye-catching properties, was a hazy, grainy gray outline. I expected Dex to give me a hand any moment, but I didn't sense Dex near me anymore. "Dex?" I said tentatively. My voice was barely audible in the wind. Hair flew in my mouth. It tasted like old fish. "Dex!" I cried out louder. I listened hard, holding my breath. I could only hear the howling wind and the faint thump of waves carried on it. With great care, I got to my feet, keeping as low to the ground as possible. It was so disorienting, being in the dark, with no idea whatsoever what way was east or west, where the lighthouse was, where the house was, or where Dex was. In fact, the more I thought about it, the more I started to panic. The lightning struck again in the distance. It was not enough to light up anything near me, but at least I could deduce which way was north. I was facing it. I turned around, knowing that I had to go south and up a slight cliff if I wanted to get to the lighthouse. That's where Dex had to be. He had the flashlight, after all. And I had my phone. I brought it out of my pocket and turned on the flashlight app, but unless the light was less than a foot away, I couldn't see Dick. Step by unsteady step, I walked forward, periodically calling out Dex's name until the unstable sand left my feet and I felt hard, sloping terrain. It felt like I was walking up the same area as I had the week before. I scrambled up the slope, grasping the wet grass and loose rocks until I finally found myself on top of the cliff. I paused to catch my breath, and then made a few quick steps forward in case I got lazy and took a wrong step too close to the edge. Now what? The ground was mercifully level, but I was still extremely blind. You'd think my night vision would have kicked in, but the most I could see was the shadow of my hand in front of my face. "Dex, please, where are you?" I screamed. I did not want to sound panicky, but I felt like I would experience a massive panic attack if I did not find him, the lighthouse, or some sign of humanity soon. I closed my eyes for 10 seconds and counted down. I hoped that when I opened them, my night vision would be a bit better. The scary thing was, aside from the shelter my eyelids provided from the drying wind, there wasn't much difference between having my eyes open or closed. When I hit zero, I slowly opened them and prayed they would adjust to the dark. There was none of that. Everything looked the same. Except there was a light. I swear there was, unless my eyes were playing tricks on me. I squinted in what direction, I wasn't sure, but off in the distance, there was a warmish glow, and it flickered rapidly. I awkwardly started walking toward it. My legs took careful steps as my arms swung out in front of me in case I walked into something, or someone. I pushed all creepy thoughts out of my head and kept my eyes focused on the light. The more I walked, the closer the light became, until I was sure it was a campfire of some sort. Who would light a campfire at a time like this? I didn't know. Maybe it was Dex trying to get my attention? I was close now. The ground changed into a leaf-littered path. I felt drips on my shoulders and noticed the wind had died down. It was still blowing steadily, but funneled somehow. I was in the forest. Not a good place to be, but the light was only a few yards away. I couldn't make it out until I was right on top of it. It wasn't a campfire at all, but a lantern of some sort that was hanging from the branch of a dead tree. The lamp had lit up the closest trunks and left the rest of the woods in eerie shadow.